Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to engage in the ultimate retro nerd experience. The Techno Funk Boy presents The Retro Station.
Point in time, Wesley, Super Inframan, get on it. He knows what I'm talking about. It's a weird weeby pension dad thing, and it's like bootleg Chinese Ultraman, and he needs to watch it so that he can share my pain.
Gosh. And by the way, Wes, I got into second season of My Hero Academia. People have been recommending to me. I cannot get enough of this stupid show.
My Hero is so good, dude. So good.
It is. It's like everything I've been wanting storytelling to be in this age, and it's not. It's, you know, self-sacrifice and noble characters and in helping each other and caring. It's so good. So I'm actually catching up with Wes on something, because normally what happens is I go, hey, I think I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to play this game or watch this show. And Wes is like, that sounds great. I'm going to join you. I am done.
Yes.
And then 3 years later, I'm like, hey, I finished that thing. And he's like, oh, I'm going to have to rewatch that because I've forgotten it all already. Okay, I'm done.
Dude, yeah. How many seasons are out for My Hero now?
Oh, goodness. Let me see if I can find out real quick.
And just so like the viewers and the listeners, if this is going to make it into the podcast at all, this is what we do on the Backlog Breakdown. We are super good at being bad at brevity, and we find a way to rabbit trail and sidetrack everything.
Oh yeah. All right. Seasons. There's 5 seasons.
Holy smokes.
On Hulu. Yeah. And like besides season 1 and 5, they're all 50 episode seasons. So there's almost 200 episodes.
I think on Hulu it counts the season, so it's like 20. It's actually 25 episodes because the subs and dubs each count for an episode.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Okay. So about 100. I have about 100 episodes on Hulu.
Hmm.
But I didn't know it was a show, and people were recommending it to me like from the comic world. And so I got the first book. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much word for word, but it's so good. It's,
I can't see. I'm going to move my, I'm doing this in the most awkward way possible.
Here it is right here.
Okay. So,
oh, I got it right here. It's so good. It's great.
You can't see it, but behind me is this is my board game shelf, and I have some manga and some comic books and stuff. This is like my fun stuff shelf, like all my old game guides and like, but anyways, that's my PSVR up there. But I was really into One Punch Man. The first season of mm-hmm. One Punch Man is fantastic, Paul. It's actually a commentary on sort of like the superpowered superhero manga / anime. It's basically like a spoof on Dragon Ball Z, right? And it's fantastic. Second season is like it's fine. It's good. So she got me the first 3 One Punch Man books. but they didn't have any more. So she grabbed me the first book of My Hero and I read it. And then I saw the anime and I was like, Beth, we're done. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm so into this thing. And so, yeah.
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 Rave mentioned his favorite character, Aizawa, who is amazing. And I just passed the point where, like, the bad guys invade the school and they're trying to kill All Might.
Yeah.
And Aizawa, like, you know, single-handedly takes them all on just to stall for time so they can escape and stuff. And seeing him full beast mode is so cool. It was like that whole sequence was so tense. The whole thing was so good. It's not true anime unless yelling occurs profusely.
Well, unless you basically have
over 9,000 decibels.
Unless you have 3 episodes worth of yelling sandwiched in those 25 other episodes, like, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Not legitimate, not valid.
All right. So, yeah, I have distracted myself. I was trying to rewatch Babylon 5, and I've distracted myself with My Hero, and I am very pleased. I'm just absolutely loving it. And by the way, I'll mention here, because our next stream is going to be Saturday, and we're going to be continuing our D&D adventure Dawn of the Necromancer, and it is now officially a Dice and Dre prequel because Jeff is playing the paladin that will eventually become Lance the Sword that Crethid carries, and he's playing him like All Might, and it's a ton of fun. The real Bergern is going to be in the series, I'm not going to get into all of that history, but
I was going to say there's some spoilers in there, man, if somebody's not caught up. I mean, I didn't know that Lance was actually a person.
I didn't either. And Jeff was, because when we did the first episode, Jeff was clearly doing the same voice as Lance, and so we were joking about it. But this game did not take place in the Forgotten Realms, and it took place in another universe. And so Vader Kid wanted to play the real life Bergern, and I was like, yeah, I'd be cool with that. That's no problem. That'd be fun. And so then Jeff and I got talking, and I was like, what if this is the prequel? The Dice and Dreary. And what we've been joking that you're playing the same character, the Sword, but what if you are the Sword? And he mentioned, he's like, yeah, I always thought that Lance had been a real person at one point. And so we are taking that and we're running with it. And so so that's going to be on Saturday. We're playing, the second part of this really good adventure that I found because I reviewed it for Everything Board Games site, and really just kind of fell in love with the adventure. And I did a test run with a bunch of people, and everybody really enjoyed it and wanted to continue playing it. I'm like, okay, well, we're going to continue playing it. And so that's going to be Saturday.
So is the audio from that going to make it onto podcast feeds in any way, shape, or form?
No, not in podcast. It is, all the adventures will remain on YouTube.
Okay. Okay.
Forever. And so
forever.
Forever. Because YouTube will, once
never die
comes,
YouTube
it'll still be on.
Never dies.
No one will have electricity to watch YouTube, but somebody will still be there maintaining the servers. He's like, I've got to keep it up in case somebody wants to watch Dawn of the Necromancer.
that specifically.
That specifically, yes. That's going to be the big, big hit. Welcome to the Retro Station. This
Again.
Is part two of our adventure, of our discussion of Neverending Story. For those who are joining us live on Twitch, no time has passed at all.
None.
Since last time. Do appreciate y'all joining on Twitch. Go ahead and we'll mention this because it has been an hour or so. It is my birthday today. And for my birthday, the only thing I wanted was more emotes. And so we've reached a goal to get one of a new emote for the channel. And so if you follow the link, I'll go ahead and put it up. You can vote on which emote we want to use. And there, the examples are right here. Guitar Chocobo, Surprise Chocobo, and Rip Chocobo. Osoro, thank you so much. Wow.
Wow.
Gifted five subs. That's amazing. Dude, thank you. Okay, well, we're going to get two of these. So, y'all do your voting thing.
I really want these emotes.
Y'all do your voting thing, and let's pick which ones we want.
I think the surprised one is a hard lock.
Did you vote?
I didn't because I've been busy talking to you.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. Thank y'all so much. Y'all have been amazing. I've mentioned this before, but like I had this channel running like a year and it was doing nothing. And, all of a sudden I started having fun with a lot of people and it's been a blast for the last few months, streaming again, where I was getting tired of it. Cause like no one would talk to me. And so I really do appreciate it. And thank y'all so much for hanging out today and celebrating with me. And we are going to be going for quite a bit longer, but we're going to talk about Never Ending Story, the novel.
Yeah, I mean, I got to give a quick shout out to our dude, Wilkes 1865. I see that tune link. Respect. I see that tune link in the feed. Respect. Tune link is best link.
You've heard it here first.
Tune link is
best. Probably not first, but
definitively.
Definitively. Right. So y'all go ahead and do the things. If you do the birthday link, there are two links in that. One is for my latest novel, The Hallowing of Ground, that is free on Discord on Kindle right now. And also music link for the Dragon Warrior EP I arranged three songs from Dragon Warrior, and they're a lot of fun. And that is available on Bandcamp for free right now. So please do check those out. Neverending Story.
The book.
The story that goes on. The book that went twice as long as I thought it would, because I did not realize that the movie stopped halfway through.
Man, we're about to get bombarded with some Pokemans.
It happens.
And some Doritos, it looks like, too.
Those Doritos look great. Where's that from? Oh, that's a Twitch Global? That's awesome.
And
Illuminati?
Man, it's getting wild up in here. It's getting wild. Actually, I have, some legit Doritos in my house, and I kind of want to go eat them now.
Right?
Just the power of suggestion.
Man. I got so much candy that my kids gave me for my birthday.
Nice.
And I think on break, I am going to go. I've only had it wasn't two pieces of cake, and I do understand that a piece of cake is a piece of cake no matter how small it is because it's a piece, but it was really like two half pieces, but I did have two cakes and candy.
Well, I mean, listen, it's your birthday,
and Mexican food.
Just it's a food day. It's a food day.
It is a food day.
People don't like, so in one of our Discord chats, I actually meant to say it's a good day, but because I can't type even on my phone, it auto corrected to it's a food day. And so, yeah, no, it's a food day.
It is a food day. Two halves of a cake. It wasn't a full half of a cake, but they were very, very good. Yeah, I ran across this book because I was working at a bookstore in college, and I was also collecting books at the time. And so it would just pick up stuff that interested me. And one of my coworkers told me that this was really, really good. And it's one of those books that like you could feel that this was quality printing, you know. It wasn't like a throwaway mass market paperback, but you feel like somebody made this book to
last.
Was
it a hardback or?
No, it was paperback, but it was trade paperback. It was just really nicely printed, right. Really nicely bound.
Yeah.
I think it was soon thereafter I got this job. This was the best job ever, except that the pay was crap. I got this job because when I graduated from college, and I was in Houston, I graduated like 2 months after Enron collapsed. And so like the Houston job market was like flooded with like highly qualified people who were not, you know, idiots who had just graduated from high school like me. Vader Kid redeemed emote only chat. So emotes only for chat, for the next bit. But I got this job at a bank that paid nothing, but they sent me out to close this drive up location, and all the customers had been notified that we were closing. And so when I went out there, they said, okay, you're going to have about 2 hours worth of work to do every day, but we need you there in case somebody drives up. Can you entertain yourself? And I said, yes, I can.
I can do that.
And I can do that. And so I was blowing through like two novels a week. I was teaching myself Latin and also writing a novel of my own all at work. And I was like going through books so quickly, like I wasn't keeping, you know, I was having trouble keeping up with like them. And I was like, oh, Never Ending Story. I hadn't read that. And I absolutely fell in love with this book. I thought it was absolutely great. And so when we were talking about doing Never Ending Story, you're like, yeah, that's a 90-minute movie. It won't take me long to rewatch it. I could come on and we can discuss that. And I'm like, great, read the book. And you actually did.
Well, I mean, I didn't read it. I listened to it, but yeah.
Well, that's the same thing. It's 2021. That is reading.
Well, and that's
no one reads words anymore. Like a sucker.
Like Josh and I, we recorded last night, and you know, cause we record Monday nights, you know, this, but anyways, we got to talking about books though. And we were talking about how, now, I pretty much, when it comes to fiction, outside of like maybe some like classic literature stuff, I pretty much exclusively listen to fiction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, dude, we are getting bombed. Like they are.
I know.
It's actually like slowing down. Like I'm watching the Twitch stream, and it's actually slowing it down. You guys are. It's impressive. I'm actually, you know what, just because it's distracting. It's too distracting. I can't do it.
Like imagine, because for y'all, like when y'all record like an hour and a half episode, it takes you 36 hours to record that.
I don't think we've had an hour and a half episode in like months.
Yeah. I do remember like when we did Zelda 2. You know, I think that ended up being like an hour and a half episode, and y'all were going on about, I can't believe how long this episode turned out. This is insane.
Dude, no, and, I think that was like two and a half. I really do.
What, Andrew?
I mean, we could easily remedy this by going back and looking, but I'm not going to do that.
I am, no, absolutely. what are your best episodes?
It was, I mean,
I absolutely think this was one of your best episodes. It was so good.
It was a ton of fun.
How long ago was that? Holy smokes.
That was very early on. See, now I'm actually looking at this. And
What do we call it? It was something.
Legend of Zelda No Densetsu or something like that. It might be within the first, that is way down there. We have, well, and that's like, I don't know if I've ever.
Why can I not find it?
I will find it for you, friend. Episode 8, Backlog Breakdown, No Densetsu, Lynx Adventure, that's featuring right. Average was, Trainer Wes yeah, okay. and the Techno Funk Boy. It was 2 hours and 6 minutes.
The description is, we are error, which is great.
Yeah, that's.
But so 2 hours, yeah, 2:08.
All that right. was really the beginning of a lot of like our sort of like collaboration and sort of like, it was like, we had sort of, we had all been friendly before that, but that was really like, at that point in time for us, it became very much like, we want to be on your shows and we want yeah. you guys to come on ours. And it was like, we're friends, like, let's just like, and that was, but that was sort of the beginning of the end as far as like, because, well, okay. And anybody who's listened to our show, like, listen, if you're going to listen to the Backlog Breakdown, it's beefy. They're always at least 2 hours and change. Always, just always, always,
become,
always.
Become a patron, because then you get like the uncut extended episode and it ends up being 4 hours.
It's yeah, it's like it's so big that a lot of times it has to get split in half.
it's totally true. And it's like, I felt so bad. Like I was on recently on Emulation, and I noticed that episodes 5 and 6 are both on Emulation, and I was like, oh, y'all haven't gotten much further than that in years.
No. But well, it was supposed to be the original. When I pitched this to Josh, it was like, dude, we'll do this every couple of weeks. It'll be an hour and a half, 2 hours tops, in and out, painless. And
it's painful now. It's so painful.
Well, I'm numb to it. I'm just like, I'm like, man.
Oh, like, well, so this is why I felt bad, because during the Emulation thing, between just behind the scenes thing and me ranting about a lot of stuff, because y'all don't even know, like, I'm so toned down in Retro Station, which is weird, but I go off on conspiracy theories pretty good. So if you want to hear these things, you'll hear me unplug.
Like, it's at great. Some point in time, I'm going to like actually just like make, like, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to, when we have you on, I'm just going to line my reading room here and just nothing but tinfoil and wear the hat, you know. I'm just going to make tinfoil hats. I'll mail them to you and Josh, and we can just all wear tinfoil hats. And
but by the end, like I was saying something and I could see like y'all going, and
oh boy,
that's all of our time for today.
We're done now. no, I mean, it's all in good fun. It's all in good fun. And I mean, like, I think, well, and you and I have had this conversation too. It's that, and you even said it to me one time. You said, Nate, I am the guy who sort of pushes and at the sort of fringes of things. And you and I mean, I very much agree that like we need people like you to sort of like kick at the walls a lot more. Like mm-hmm. you're a lot more willing to like take shots at things. Whereas at this point in time, like I've just been like so ground down by the brutality of life that I'm just like, I'm
older than you, son.
Well, I'm also 8 years Army and I was a truck driver. And I mean, like, you know, it's like, and I made a ton of terrible decisions. So it's like, I have 40 years of hard living. And I'm not saying that you don't have 44 years of hard living, but you don't look a day over 40. But I'm just saying, like, you know, I and we all sort of like handle stuff differently, and yeah. I just sort of hit a point where it's like my explosive outbursts are much more contained than they used to be, you know. And at this point,
that's true. That's
I'm just kind of like, I'm tired. I just want to go take a nap. Yeah, more often than not, my response.
Which is ironic, because we're up at 2 a.m. recording podcasts and you're like, I need to take a nap. I'm like, maybe you should have gone to bed like a normal person.
Well, if I did that, then I couldn't record the podcast. And yeah.
That's true. Yeah. And it's like, it's especially fun when you have like Wes on, and it's like, this is the problem we have with Dice and Dreary, is we're like, we are like, if America had corners, we would be at the opposite corners between California, Maine, and Texas, you know? And so finding the right time to, you know, have it so Maine doesn't fall asleep, but you know, California has actually gotten home from work is tough.
yeah, man. It's I mean, it's very cool that we can do these things, right? But at the same time, it is like, I mean, like, even sort of in coordinating with, like, sort of when we have Wes on the show, because he's an hour further behind you guys. I don't, you know, mm-hmm. I'm at 10:21. You're at 9:21. He's at 8:21 right now. And so you have to,
he's at 7:20.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So he's even further on down, but it's like, and it's just one of those things where it's like, I mean, it's super cool, but at the same time, like, the logistics can be a bit of a nightmare. And I can only imagine that if you sort of kick that out even further. So,
oh yeah, well yeah,
like, cuz where I mean, I'm not trying to be nosy, but where in Maine is Ken? Is he even, cuz I think there's one time zone past me in the continental United States.
Oh really? I didn't know that. He's on Eastern time.
Oh, so he is on Eastern. I think there's a part of, like, Maine that is actually one lat, like one,
like Greenland time. I don't know what that would be, but
like
dang.
I think that I, you know, that's something where I could be very wrong. So
could be, but yeah. Rave says Maine is only one time zone.
Okay. So okay.
You heard it here, folks. First,
it's definitive.
You heard it here, folks. First. Wow. I still have like 3 hours to go before I'm done tonight,
dude. And man, it's you're already fading. Well, hey, dude, let's capitalize. Like, let's keep, like, your energy. Like, let's vibe on this, and let's get real silly and talk about Never Ending Story, the book.
Never Ending Story actually doesn't have a song. It's a book.
No, there's no song for the book. Well, Audible has, like, the weird, like, there is, like, the audiobook, like, weird, like, little, like, you know, they have, like, the little burner music kind of intros where it's like has, like, some sort of, like, just like copyright free music that they play or something. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
We sort of talked about it earlier, but, like, the first half of that book and the movie, it's pretty parallel, and it is.
Yeah.
I mean,
and for the podcast, we talked about the first movie last week. It's still available on podcast, but if we addressed some of the stuff in the book then, and so I imagine that we're going to spend most of our time in the second half. If you're just interested in the first half, then that was on a podcast.
Yeah, I mean,
but yeah,
there are some differences, and we talked about those, you know, earlier. But like the fact that Bastion is just a repugnant little, he's a stupid fat kid that probably deserves to be thrashed, you know, because he's also a coward. And you know, I think you touched on it last episode. This is weird, but you touched on it when we were talking about it earlier, about how, like, he goes into the bookstore and the bookkeeper is sort of, like, giving him grief, and he's like, well, punch the kids in the movie, he's like, punch the kids in the nose, and Bastion's like, no. And at that point in time in the book, the storekeeper is like, you're worthless. Like, he basically says, like,
yeah,
you have it coming. Like, you're not willing to stand up for yourself. You're not, like, fighting back. You're just kind of taking it on the chin, and you're kind of stupid and you're fat. So you deserve this, which is kind of not I would hope that we wouldn't want adults to really treat kids that way. But,
at some point, the bookseller, it just in general hates children.
Yeah.
And, but it kind of becomes convinced that, you know, no, this is somebody who loves stories and so might be worth talking to. And I do think that, like, there is a certain amount of, you know, okay, somebody's got to talk to this kid like this, because his father definitely
is. Oh yeah. You know? Dad is not, you know, sort of, dad's been checked out for a bit.
Right. And so the bookkeeper being not a fan of children and not being around children ever, probably doesn't handle it in the best way. But I do get the impression that he is trying to, like, you know, bring him along, you know,
and kind of giving a
little bit of tough love, emphasis on the tough and less love than normal. But he's saying the things that we want to say to Bastian, because especially as the book goes on, it's like, you do want to slap that
kid. He's just such a sad sack. Like, it's like he is kind of like, and we've talked about how, like, it's sort of like he almost seems like more of a framing device for the actual story. And then it does shift, but he's so passive in everything, you know, and it's kind of, well, it's pathetic, you know,
that's good work. He's pathetic. And I just looked up and Rave said, did a bowl today. He's like, Rave, you got to give more context for that. The first movie is pretty darn faithful. It cuts out. We mentioned the spider scene, which is one of my favorite scenes. It really changes. How do you pronounce that? The Oracle's name. It's like Iulala, Waiulala, something like that.
Like, it's Uyulala or something.
Something like that. I really liked her scene in the book, and they change it to just be kind of we're looking at more sphinxes, just colorful ones this time. Jen said, really thought you were talking about something else there for a second. I was like, yes.
Space phoenixes or space sphinxes.
Yeah.
Or cosmic sphinxes.
And you kind of have to do that because Iulala is invisible.
Well,
she's like a breeze.
You can only ask her. She will only respond to rhyme.
Yeah.
But then she's just sort of, she's the voice of nothingness or not nothingness. I'm going to Google this. I doubt I'll find it because I'm not even sure how to spell her name. But like she's basically just, she doesn't possess a form. She's just sort of like an embodied voice.
You definitely have to change that for the movie. I like sphinxes. And I think it's super cool when they start crumbling. I thought that was really effective scene. And so, it kind of makes visual something that was very abstract in the books that Iulala is dying here. She is going away, and this whole area is dissolving, but that's not something that Atreyu sees. It's just something he knows. And so it is kind of like a nice way to make that physical and visual.
So actually Uyulala does have, is the voice of the sphinxes, I guess. And it's just in the movie, she's not called Uyulala. It's just referred to the Southern Oracle. And the girl, Tammy Stronach or Stronach, who played the childlike empress, actually voices that.
Oh, that's cool.
But I'm trying to.
Oh, that actually makes kind of sense narratively too.
I was looking this up. It doesn't give the book, but it's just a disembodied voice. Yeah. Anyways.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's the other scene that they didn't cut it, obviously, but they truncated it a lot. And I really liked that scene in the book. I thought it was very cool. Well, they cut a whole gate out of that section.
That third gate where he basically has to sort of like just stop caring. And the way that they get to that process, and even sort of like the passage of time, because he was in that gate for like they did some weird, you know, to quote Doctor Who, some timey-wimey stuff.
There's Putin. Thanks again for the gift sub. That's awesome. I appreciate it. I get distracted by subs. The next emote is quite a bit of ways. We'd have to get up to 50. And so that I didn't even put up as a goal because that's a lot.
But hey, I believe that your listeners and viewers can make it happen for you. I'm going to put that into the cosmos. I'm going to wish that into existence. That's not how that works at all. But
no,
but I mean, it'd be really cool if that happened. So
we would have to have more subs than we have viewers, and so that's why I'm saying it's a bit of a stretch. And like everyone's got like emotes. Or got the channel badges now. But yeah, I really do appreciate it. And I'm absolutely thrilled that we're getting some more emotes, and it's gonna be a lot of fun. So, anyways, Eulala, Southern Oracle, yeah. Some more stuff happens. But we addressed a lot of that in the first episode, but there's a whole second half to this story.
Yeah.
And I guess we should mention this was originally a German novel. Mm-hmm. And when I say it did fantastically well in Germany, it was like on the bestseller list for like literal years. And so it was huge. And I think deservedly so. I think it's pretty good. It's a really good book. And it goes a lot deeper in that first section about the nature of Fantastica, of the need for story and what happens when we're not grounded by good story. And so at the end of that first part, Bastian has realized that he is the one that's going to rename the Childlike Empress and basically retell the stories that build this place for a new generation.
Yeah.
And he is symbolically granted Orin, the symbol on the necklace that protected Atreyu in the first section. It has the power of thank you for the cheer, Jen. Wow, thank you. That's great. A thousand bits. Thank you so much. It gives him the power of the Childlike Empress and the power to create this world as he wills through wishes, and to also grant whatever he would like. He kind of goes too far with it.
Kind of goes too far. That is an incredibly political way to say that. That's almost a problematic description of what happens. He really doesn't like that word, ladies and gentlemen.
Problematic's a terrible word.
Problematic is not his favorite word. But no, I mean, I mean, it's, and I think too, it starts out pretty innocently, right? So when he first, because he comes to Fantastica, all right? In the book, it's called Fantastica. In the movie, it's called Fantasia. But he comes to this land of stories. And he actually, part of it is like, he has a new form. He's made handsome and strong. He's not fat and dumpy and stupid looking and just kind of stupid. He actually becomes clever, and to a certain extent, he's still kind of stupid. But he sort of starts having these adventures, and he does all sorts of like these really crazy things. Right before this, so there's that whole like the infinite loop sort of sequence where it's like they basically just keep retelling the story and basically forcing Bastian to name the Childlike Empress. And then when he finally comes into it, he starts out, I mean, like the, like it does like a hard pivot here, and we get some really cool set pieces. And it's not to say that the set pieces before weren't good, but I think like, I mean, that initial one where it's the jungle that sprouts overnight, but then during the day it's a desert where all the sands are a bunch of different colors, and there's a giant magic lion that
I was actually looking up his name because this is my favorite scene in the book.
Yeah.
I love this section.
It's pretty dope. It's
And this lion is it Grogaman? The mini colored death and
something and like it, that, yeah.
So the lion is basically fire and it destroys all life for I think like 100 miles in radius of it. So he's never seen somebody else. He's never talked to anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so he meets Bastion, who's being protected by Auron, and Bastion is able to ride him, and this is just a super cool scene. And but every night the lion dies, and this forest grows up, and in the mornings the lion is reborn kind of like Phoenix and wipes everything out. And it's just this really kind of touching scene where the lion doesn't understand any of this because he can't see any of it, and finally ask him, you know, it's like, why, you know, you're creating all this. Why do I die every night? And Bastion explains so that this forest of color can exist.
Well, and, it's the forest grows up overnight. And he's like, if you didn't wake up and sort of regain, this forest would overgrow to the point where it would take over all of Fantastica.
Right. Yeah. So the lion is the protection against the forest, but the lion also dies so that the forest can start anew.
It's
just really great, cool idea. And, this is something that the lion didn't know. He had never seen any evidence of the forest because as soon as he wakes, he wipes everything out.
Yeah.
It was really cool and really touching. And, I thought this whole section was really, really neat. And it's like, you know, this is the stuff we find at first. And it's really just a kid playing in a fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
As he goes, the wishes he wishes end up kind of starting to steal away from his memory. And he starts becoming less and less Bastion and more and more of just a different type of jerk.
Yeah.
than Bastion was.
Well, he starts emptying himself of like all of his, like he starts forgetting his father and he forgets his life before Fantastica, and he sort of starts emptying out and really sort of opens himself up to some bad counsel. And what's interesting is that, you know, in a way, he starts out trying to like, so he gets out of the desert and he runs into some people and they're saying, well, we're going to this city because Atreyu and Falkor are there and they're actually putting together a search party because the hero of Fantastica is here and they're going to send out a search party to rescue him, you know, to go and meet him and maybe rescue him if he needs it. And so he accompanies this search party, and he ends up sort of, three of the people become companions that remain pretty much with him for the remainder of the story, you know, until they don't. But you know, and there's a bunch of stuff that happens, and basically he makes all these wishes in order to sort of impress other people. He makes these decisions not to better anybody or not to, but it's like, because, you know, when he tells these stories and this, and it's it, in the book, it's kind of confusing because it's like, is he rewriting the history? Like, is he writing these stories with his mind and sort of like shaping the history, or is he just revealing the things that have already and always been there in these stories. And it, and I think there's a bit of a commentary on how, you know, storytelling could work, you know, it's like,
I can't remember if it was a line that said this or somebody else, but, you know, when at some point he like creates a forest and he's like, you know, it's like, well, when, you know, it's, they're saying it's like, you know, this forest has been there 1,000 years. He's like, well, it wasn't here yesterday. He's like, well, when you made it, it had been there. When you made it last night, it had been there 1,000 years, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's just a kind of weird balance of it. That I think is cool.
Well, even when he goes to the city that's on the, mm-hmm. the super salt lake thing and
the
floating city. And he tells the story about how the city was built and what the lake is. And then he tells the story about like how, like he's telling these stories to people and it reveals like these histories. And so it's like, he tells a story to the city about like their library. And they're like, there's this building that we've never been able to open. And now we can open it all of a sudden. And it's filled with all these books. It's our library. Like, thank you. And it's kind of like, did it come into being because he told the story? Or was it already there? And he just revealed it through his narrative. Like, and there's, and again, like I said, there's an interesting tension. But then, like later on, so there's those really hideous monsters that cry these tears that cause this lake that the city is on, and he meets them, and he's so like repulsed and but also sympathetic to like their plight because they are so ugly that they just weep nonstop. They are so repulsive to even themselves; they're constantly weeping, and they weep so much that they've actually created this salt lake that will destroy anything that swims in it. It's so like caustic. And he ends up, he's like, he feels bad. And so he wishes that, well, they would no longer be these things. And he instead turns them into these like clown butterflies who are sort of obnoxious, but
sort of is
they're obnoxious, but then and he's making all these decisions in the moment based on what he thinks is the best possible recourse, right
mm-hmm.
because like these things, they're just like, oh, we're awful, we're miserable, we're so sort of repulsed by ourselves. It's just like, and he's like, oh, you're going to be these clown butterflies and you're going to be hilarious and you're going to be known as the laughing ones. Well, then they're obnoxious pranksters that are just nonsensical and just idiots. But then there's ramifications for that, because if they're no longer there to make the silver lattice work, and because they make this, the finest this super special silver lattice work that the city, this floating city, is built on and stuff. It's like, so they don't make any more of that. This lake has dried up. You know, there's all sorts of just weirdness that like things happen. And we were sort of talking about like how this book is, if this book is a commentary on sort of the importance of narrative, like, and so the whole premise is like Bastion needs to follow his wishes, and they tell him, it's like, you need to just keep following. You need to go from one wish to the next, and that will take you the way you need. But it almost sort of shows the danger and the pointlessness of like making stupid, poorly informed, selfish wishes and how destructive those things are. Because like in his mind, he's like, I'm going to make these really sad, gross slug things into something beautiful and fun and, you know, just comical. And now they'll laugh and they won't cry. And there's these ramifications, and it is a commentary on sort of narrative and saying like, when you make these sort of ill-informed sort of, okay. And I really hate going back to this, but like, look at Ready Player Two, right? So
I'd rather not.
Well, I know. Neither would I. But, you know, and again, I've made the point that Ready Player One has a certain charm to it. It's not great, and it's – but – it, and Ready Player Two actually sort of makes it even worse, but that's because Ready Player Two is a pandering trash mess. And it's actually a worse version of the first book that reveals all the jaded cynicism and sort of like the cash grabbiness of the first book. Mm-hmm. But the reason it's that way is because it's a pandering, trashy mess. He doesn't have anything. He's trying to like curry favor, and he's trying to vindicate and, you know, endorse people, when instead it sort of reveals like the fact that like Klein didn't really have a story to tell. You know, he had a neat playground, and that's all he ever had, you know. But like, and it's like, but this is like, this is the sort of the contextual, like this is the meta narrative of the second half of the book, is like, you know, and just Bastion basically goes from like, he starts out really good, and then he just goes from good to bad to worse to just.
Hey, Grandpa, I just can't wait to play GTA 5 online with my new PS5. Can you buy it for me for my birthday?
Well, you know, when I was your age, I had all the time in the world for video games, but no money to buy new ones. That's how I was able to beat the classics, like The Legend of Zelda.
Well, that's great, Grandpa.
Nowadays, I have all the money I need for games. In fact, they've never been easier and cheaper to buy. But, son, your grandpa amassed an entire library of games that he's never played. And now that I'm old, I just don't have the time to play them all.
Okay, Grandpa, I think my squad's getting together, so I've got
to go. That's why I listen to The Backlog Breakdown, a podcast about becoming a wise steward of your time while also enjoying video games. Whether it's detailing the strengths and pitfalls of specific games, or encouraging you to take stock of your buying habits, The Backlog Breakdown helps me to get the most out of the games that I play.
You know, Christmas is still a few months away, so just forget that
They're also really good at being bad at brevity.
Did you forget to take your meds this morning?
The lion gives him this sword that eventually will represent his real trip tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
The sword, Sikonda, that is this magical sword, but it can only be properly used when it chooses.
It will draw itself.
Yeah, it will draw itself and jump into his hand when the cause is right. And Bastion eventually reaches the point where he forces it.
Mm-hmm.
And it loses its, what made it great. And it's that point where he's trying to take power that's not rightfully his.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do we want to go down that, like, do we want to jump that far ahead, or do we sort of want to like wander through some of the set pieces and talk about that moment?
Some of the set pieces are a lot of fun. I mentioned in the last episode, when he gets to town and the knight that he eventually sends off to save the princess.
Yeah.
Heinrich.
Who was super dismayed because he got, well, and listen, he's got multiple reasons to be bummed, because he just got, there's this tournament. And he beats the three other finest knights, like the strongest knight, the most nimble knight, and the fastest knight, right? He beats them hands down. He's like, he is the champion of champions. And he's pursued this for this woman, for this princess.
Right. Yeah. And this princess will not, I'm not interested unless you are the best.
Like you are the best hero.
Yeah, she's a punk and she's superficial.
Yeah.
But you know, this is a courtly love tradition, so we've got to prove ourselves in tournament.
Yeah.
And Bastion comes in and he's giving people a show without realizing he's embarrassing people.
Yeah.
You know, and he stomps this guy, and the princess that tells him, because she's a punk, it's like, well, you're not the best, sucker.
I'm out. I'm leaving. I'm out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah, she's a total tool. but
this hero is like Hero Heinrich is what they call him. But like he's yeah. totally despondent over this. And so Bastian does this thing where he wishes a story for him. And then Hero Heinrich goes and saves this princess from this horrible monster. Yeah. You know.
Oh, and it's a. I mean, the amount of obstacles Bastian puts in that dude's way, you know.
Yeah,
there are swamps and fortresses and armies and stuff.
And it's like, and then this,
you know.
And you've got to sneak into the monster's castle, and there's a weapon in his castle that can destroy the monster. And so, like, there's all this stuff, and then this is the refrain that sort of gets repeated, where he finally goes through with it. He rescues the princess, and he's like. But he kind of decides she wasn't all that worthwhile anyways, and goes on and does all these other things and has more adventures. But that's a different story to be told another time, yeah. You know?
Yeah. And I love that, because it's like, you know, he, as bad as that princess was, you know, he was completely superficial as well. It's like, no, she's pretty. I've got to earn her love.
Yeah.
But you figure out that, you don't know why, but along the way he learns something, and you know, by the time he actually finishes his quest, he's matured a lot. She has not, but he has. And so I really like that. I think that that's pretty cool. And
yeah.
And so, but yeah, through all this he kind of unites with Atreyu and Falcor, and reveals himself that hey, there's no reason for us to y'all go hunting for me. I'm right here.
Look
at how pretty I am, because he's not fat, he's ripped.
He's very handsome and ripped, and yeah, he's a very strong, handsome individual. And I think, you know, there's the, like, they start receiving all these different, like, envoys or envoys from the different kingdoms in Fantastica, who have all these problems that they need him to solve. And they're sort of like going through this procession, and I think this is sort of like the beginning, not the beginning of the end, but like there's some stuff that happens that sort of, there's some discord sown between Atreyu and Bastian. Like there's there's some things where Bastian and Atreyu are they have these moments where they recognize the profoundness of their friendship. And it's like, these are two boys who just have found fast friends. And then some things happen where basically Bastian, as he wishes, and he loses some of himself, he loses some of the things that connect him to Atreyu, and he stops listening to the counsel of Atreyu and Falcor, who are legitimately concerned for him and care for him. And he actually makes decisions that endanger him, and he brings on counselors, you know, and or disciples or whatever, that lead him astray, you know, that witch, whatever her name is. And
I'm looking at it and I'm like, how was this actually pronounced, because I cannot figure it out. But she's a sneaky one.
Well, and it's and like Atreyu and Falcor are just like, dude, she's not worth, like, you probably shouldn't keep her around. And he has this moment where he's like, listen, I'm the guy who saved Fantastica. I'll figure this out. Yeah. Like,
oh yeah. And in the way she appeals to his ego from the very beginning, because she's, she's holed up, and she's, you know, she's doing bad stuff. And, you know, doesn't think that they have this whole plan to get inside. And Bastian is, you know, using his awesomeness to kind of defeat her, and she just, like, immediately is like, oh, you're super great, I didn't even realize this, you know, I give up and I swear fealty to you, because you're super wise and all
strong
this,
and you've bested me, kind of, like,
right, yeah. And Bastion's like, well, Okay, well,
sounds good to me.
I guess you're coming with us. And what one of the kind of cool things is she already has her carriage ready to go with him. And Atreyu's like, how did she know to get her carriage ready there, Bastion?
Yeah, like,
you ever think about that? And he's like, what? No, it's fine. She's cute. He didn't say that, well, but that's my interpretation.
It's like, it's fine. You know, hey, she'll do what I tell her. She's
Swarfield.
She's my loyal subject. She's, yeah. And, yeah. And that's,
yeah, the whole way there, she keeps putting, you know,
poison,
petty and egotistical things in front of him.
She's pouring poison into his ear and into his heart and his brain, and she's just like, yeah, she's constantly feeding his ego and sort of,
she's and they're on their way back to the castle because Bastion has decided that he needs to see Moonchild again, even though he's not supposed to.
Yeah,
but
I mean, he's Bastion. He's told that nobody ever gets to see her more than once, and he has all these justifications for why he should be able to. And they're like, you can go there, but they're like, well, maybe she'll be there, and maybe you'll be the exception to the rule. But that's not really how that works.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah. And by the time they get there, he is basically convinced that he is the new emperor.
Well, yeah. He's convinced by the witch or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Like she sort of feeds it, and she's created this huge amount of discord. And she actually, Falcor and Atreyu are concerned for him, and they talk about maybe removing Auron from him, and sort of like they're like, we need it, because they watch him sort of like further fall into this sort of depravity, you know, this sort of wicked, cruel, and selfish nature. And they're like,
yep,
this amulet is like the wishes that these wishes are killing him. And it ends up like, there's a schism, and this witch sort of becomes his only sort of counsel. And she basically says, well, maybe you're supposed to be the childlike emperor and, you know, and rule in the childlike empress's place. And he sort of gets into that, and it escalates to And it basically amounts in war and, the destruction of this ivory tower is like, it's so pivotal in so many ways. And when the book actually goes on to describe it, it's a tower that's a city, and it defies imagination in a lot of ways. Like the version of it in the movie is kind of like, well, that's kind of lame. I mean, I get it, 'cause it's, you know, you're working with a budget.
It's a cool set piece, but the vision of it from especially the second half of the book, it would not work.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
But he ends up destroying it, like this sort of this beautiful symbol of Fantastica and the childlike empress. And he ends up destroying the city through the war that he sparks, because, you know, sort of an elastic, he actually banishes Atreyu and Falcor, and they gather an army to sort of say, like, you're not the rightful emperor. Like, you need to stop this. And that's when he forces Secunda out of its blade and breaks it, and he wounds Atreyu. It talks about the severity of this wound. Like, it's a near lethal wound. And Atreyu and Falcor flee the field, and Bastion pursues them. Like he starts chasing after them, and he gets pulled into, it's the city of old emperors, and here he finds,
this is a cool, this is
he
a
finds
cool.
out he's not the first, well, I mean, he knew that he wasn't the first human who had ever come to Fantastica,
right?
But these are all the humans who have come to Fantastica and sought to sort of like crown themselves emperors, and how it's just led them to ruin, and they're all insane, and they just like, they have They never die. They never age. And they just sort of like, they live in these, like, it's like, you know what it reminded me of? Have you ever seen the movie Memento with Guy Pearce?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that. How he remembers things for 15 minutes. And it's like, they sort of like, the minute they put something down and they move on to something else, they totally forget what they were doing and why they were doing it. And it's just a city of chaos. And he's basically told, this is where you were headed. if you had like been crowned the emperor of Fantastica, this is actually, you would have found your way here almost immediately afterwards. This is what you were headed for. And in a book that's so sort of like heavily laden with, again, metaphor and analogy, I'm like, there's something in here that like, and I'd be interested to hear your take. What do you think the City of Old Emperors sort of is a stand-in for?
I'm not totally sure. And it's especially in the second half of the book that I like I've read it twice and I don't think I fully understand what Michael Ende is trying to say. I read a lot of people online that, draw parallels with Hitler, which is probably not outside the realm of possibility. Michael Ende lived through World War II in Germany, there's something, here about getting lost, instead of him building the story for the good of others, completely retreating into it and getting lost within it. And in a very unhealthy way. I think there's plenty of people who have kind of done that and, gotten themselves lost in fantasy, but I'm not totally sure that that's what he's really talking about. Did you have a thought on it?
Well, I mean, since this is just sort of me taking a stab at it, but it's, I would say like, since everything is sort of like metaphorical and we know that the humans who come to Fantastica are there to sort of reveal the stories, they're sort of there to write or reveal the history of Fantastica. And instead, when these people sort of seek to dominate that and sort of bend it to their own will versus being, and it's, so it's like, it's basically, if I had to sort of take a crack at it, right, I would say that the point of, and again, coming back to this, like the point of storytelling is to share truth, like, with people and with the world. And when instead you come in and you sort of seek to sort of abuse that and submit it to your will and use it to your agenda, like it actually sort of ruins you. And so it's like the people that sort of try and take these stories and make them into something they're not and sort of seek to rule over them, they get sort of lost in their own head, or, they become ruined and lost. And it's like, maybe it's just like, mm-hmm. it's sort of a sideways commentary on storytellers who, basically abuse the gift of storytelling and sort of like, saying like internally they're sort of lost in these sort of masturbatory cycles of nonsense. I don't know. That's if I had to take a stab.
I think every guest I have on Retro Station uses the term masturbatory.
It's a great word. Unfortunately we live in a culture that is an accurate descriptor for a lot of sort of our cultural context. Well, so
gosh, there's so many parallels with what is happening with storytelling today.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like look at these people and sort of like the tokenism and the wokeness and just the ridiculousness. Instead of just telling a good story that sort of reveals a little bit of truth, it's like we have to bend this thing. And again, I hate referencing it twice in this, but Ready Player Two. Like, mm-hmm. look at, like, I mean, like, in some ways, like, Klein is firmly entrenched in the city of old emperors.
Yeah. 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 Just all the stuff that's been revealed about, like, Hollywood in the last
few years. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Between Epstein's flight logs, between Me Too, between all of this stuff. And I'm not going to go into names, but you can figure it out. But, like, I saw a meme because somebody in Hollywood was speaking up about, like, you know, it's like, well, I don't respect people who do this thing politically. And it's like, the meme was like, well, I don't respect people who are on Epstein's flight log, because that actor was, you know?
Yeah.
and just like how bad that group of people have proven to be.
Well, it sort of shows, like, and again, it's sort of like they're pursuing this emptiness, and they see, like, it's when,
anyways, this was a really, really cool, memorable scene. I like, one thing about this book is, like, the scenes and the situations of the characters are really cool and memorable. Even if I don't fully understand them.
Yeah. I mean, and that goes back to the idea that this is a children's story. And so there's a lot of, like, whimsy and sort of magic and imagination and charm sort of just threaded throughout the whole thing. But then it does, like I said, like, and reading it sort of with a more mature, you know, and my mature eyes, you know, but it's like, with a little bit of insight and discernment, it's like, oh, there's some other stuff that he's sort of, I think, hinting at and talking about here. So,
yep. This is definitely a turning point for Bastian, mm-hmm. as he's kind of coming to a place of repentance for all of this. And he's now just trying to figure out a way home.
Yeah.
And that way home is to finish his wishes out, to forget everything and essentially cross this lake into
bathe and drink of the waters of life. Yeah. The fountain of life, fountain of youth, or I think, no, they call it the fountain of life, which I thought, wow,
this is the second story in a row that we're talking about it. Baptism ending it.
He does go through some things, and like he wants at one point in time, he like, so shortly after the City of Emperors, he makes a wish that he could just be a part of a community. And he runs into these people where the idea of the individual doesn't exist. And it's just like, they're a bit of a hive mind, and mm-hmm. some of them die, and it means nothing because they're all sort of, and so he's like, well, okay. So being a part of a community, like, and it like, these are sort of like a lot more sort of like heavy handed sort of realizations, but it's like,
right.
He gets to this point where it's like, well, being a community, part of a community is good, but individual, like being an individual within a community is like sort of a necessary precondition. Like there needs to be room for me to be different. And while he very much cherished that sense of belonging, after a while it chafed because he recognized that he didn't really mean anything. And so it's mm-hmm. sort of then he goes on and he makes a wish to be loved, and he goes to this house, like I think they call it the house that changes, or the changing house, or something like that.
Yes, yes, yes.
And this scene was kind of cool. And he basically,
this was really neat. Yeah.
This is able to, he goes to this house and it's this giant plant lady, and he's basically able to sort of like have like regress to sort of a childlike state. Because they make the house makes everything so big that he, even though he's like a 13-year-old boy or whatever, he is basically proportionally like a small child. And this woman that lives in the house, she becomes basically a surrogate or a foster mother for him. And he's, yep. so, and And in a lot of ways, he's able to be loved and to learn to love and to receive that love. And then, you know, eventually the time comes and it's time for him to move on. And he makes a wish to not just be loved, but to love others, to love in return. And this is sort of like the culmination of his journey in a lot of ways. And this is what ends up, and this is what ends up leading him to this fountain of life. And he's reunited with Treyu and Falcor, and there's some things that have to happen. And basically Treyu has to sort of, in the end, because at this point in time, by the time he gets to this fountain, this medallion is two snakes intertwined and they're eating each other's tail, right? That's what the symbol of the Orin is. And they get there and these two snakes, and they describe these snakes in massive terms, like that, you know, Falcor and Treyu and Bastion are like specks in comparison to the eye of these great snakes. And they sit around the fountain of life, or this fountain. And in order for Bastion to pass, he has to be able to tell his name and tell his story. And he can't, and he needs Treyu to speak for him. And Treyu tells him his name, and Treyu tells the snake his name, and Treyu tells the story, and Treyu like tells him who he is and gives him some memories back. And because of the faithfulness of his friend, he's able to enter into this fountain of life. And like basically his guilt and his unworthiness in a lot of ways are washed away, and he's made new. But then in order for him to really leave Fantastica and pass through the other side of this gate, beyond the other snake, he's asked the question. It's like, did you finish the stories you started? And there were so many stories that like he started in Fantastica, and he was like, I'll come back and I'll finish this. I'll come back and I'll visit, and I'll come back and I'll do X, Y, and Z. And he didn't do it. And they're like, you know, even like those, at one point in time, those clown butterflies, they actually come back.
Yes, I love that scene. I was like, oh, he's finally getting to the end. And they're like, and I heard this voice from over here. And I'm like, oh no, that's disaster.
And it's like, so, and it's even sort of like this, like he made a careless decision, a careless wish, and it comes back to haunt him. And I mean, and there's a whole bunch of stuff, because we didn't even talk about the memory or the dream miner.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that was like, you know, but there's these things that like, throughout the process of the story, Bastion is learning selflessness, and you know, and even sort of like, this kind of just hit me, but so like, whereas Bastion is, you know, and there's that line where it's like, you brought him with you, when Treyu is talking to the childlike empress, and like, we have been brought along this journey. And like, we have sort of been passengers, but also active participants in this journey, in much in a similar way, but not to the same extent that Bastion was a passenger and a participant in the never ending story in itself. And it's like, he ends up and Treyu, as his friend, a true friend, looks at him and says, like, stands before the snake so that he can pass to the other side, and says, I will finish these stories. Like, I will finish these stories on his behalf. And he's able to, and he passes through the gate and he's made new. And he's no longer sort of self-obsessed. He's like, you know, he becomes comfortable in his skin, because that's the body that he has and that's his. And he's learned to love. And that includes, to a certain extent, loving himself and just saying like, this is, and it's, you know, and I don't want to get too theologically oriented here, right? But I think like, you know, like I'm reading this book, I was reading this book, dude, and I was like, there's like a lot of like gospel truth and symbolism sort of buried in this thing, where it's talking about like he could only really love himself well on the other side of the fountain of life. And it's, you know, we can only really love ourselves and our neighbors well, sort of on the other side of the cross. Like, because all our love and all the things we do, like they're tainted. And I mean, even on this side of the fall, of glory, and on this side of the fall, yes, everything we do and say is tainted anyways. But it was just like, there was some like even sort of like the fact that like Atreyu gave him his name and told his, and was able to sort of speak for him, not once, but then he speaks for him and he gains him entrance to the fountain. And then he says like, and the things that you left unfinished, the things that need to be sort of addressed, I will address them. It's like, it's a bit of a,
Atreyu in that whole scene was amazing.
He's a messianic figure.
Gracious. Yeah.
So yeah.
Like even when he's asked, it's like, who gave you that wound?
Who wounded you?
And he's like, oh, Bastion did. He's like, why? And his answer was basically like, we both were wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's being really nice, because that was way more Bastion than that was you. But
I mean, he was wrong in the sense that he was trying to take Auron by force.
Right. Yeah.
But he wasn't. Yeah. It was, but like, I don't know, man. There's so much to this story that it's a wild ride, and I really think people ought to give it a go. And I mean, and the story ends. He returns home. He no longer has the copy of the Neverending Story. He goes to his father and he tells the story with his father. And he's been gone for a day, and he sort of talks to his dad, and they have this conversation. And the conversation that he has with his father shakes his father out of his stupor. Like, and sort of like his dad, like in talking to his son, is like, I've been a deadbeat. My son needs me. Like, yes, I'm mourning. I'm mourning the loss of my wife. My son is also mourning the loss of his mother. And because of my inaction, he's also mourning the loss of his father. And so there's reconciliation there. There's sort of growth. And then he goes, and I mean, like, this is a cowardly little snot-nosed brat. He goes to the bookstore of his own accord, and he looks to the
and that's notable, because his dad's like, do you want me to take care of it for you? I'll go do it. No problem. And this is like the manifestation, like between the conversation with dad and facing the owner himself, it's like, we see how much he's changed.
Yeah. We see the fulfillment of the arc.
He started the story in cowardice. That's why he was there in the first place, because he was running away, and now he's going in bravery. And so that was a cool scene. And
he gains a friend too, because it's funny, because he's like, I stole your book and I lost it, and he's telling the man the story, and the man's like, I've never owned a book like that. And we're kind of like, what? And then the guy's like, but I've been to Fantastica. And he becomes a friend. The shopkeeper becomes a friend to this boy. And the way it ends is basically happily ever after. But
yeah.
Which all the best fairy stories have that. So,
right. Only to be passed on to the next generation. Which is why it's never ending. Like you said, we've been brought along with this ride, as witnesses, but now we're the inheritors of the story, to retell it, to rename the Childlike Empress again.
So my question is, when are you going to make your kids read this book?
We've been avoiding showing him the movie because of our tags.
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one. I meant to read this last time. They tried to remake this as kind of a TV series of movies. And I got the DVD of the first one of like the pilot, and it's not overly good, but like, just to increase the tension, Bastion's mom is in the hospital dying and she's not dead yet. But if you ever run across that, please avoid it. It's
well, did you see sorry. There's a cartoon?
No, I haven't seen that.
Amazon Prime. I did some looking and it's like the Never Ending Story cartoon. And the one thing that you can say about the cartoon is it shows a picture of Atreyu, and Atreyu is a green skin. He's not a little human looking boy.
Yeah, you kind of had to change that for the live action movie, considering that you're having a 12-year-old play this. You know,
I mean,
kid actors, you only have so long per day anyways. You do not need them in the makeup chair.
I mean, I really would have loved to. What was the guy who played the Incredible Hulk? The original 70s, 80s TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Lou Ferrigno. What they should have done is just like whatever they did to Lou, just like. Like just airbrush that kid for like, dude, like just psst, 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 done.
Right.
But yeah, there's a cartoon too. It does not look very good. I'm just sort of throwing that out there though.
So BuzzFeed had an article up, and this is yet further proof that BuzzFeed is a terrible, terrible website. And, you should not go there.
No, yeah. BuzzFeed's kind of trash. So,
I do have ad blocker up so that they don't get any money for me looking at this. but 9 reasons why adults should never watch The NeverEnding Story. Remember that movie you absolutely loved as a kid? Don't watch it again. Number 1, it is so slow, so incredibly slow. And I really want to know, it's like, if you think that movie's slow, like has your brain just been fried on Marvel films?
Dude, I don't know how you think that though, because it's like,
it goes too fast for me.
It's really quick. I was like, it actually feels like abrupt at times because it's just like, it's like sequence, 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 sequence. It's like pop, 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 pop.
Right. Yeah. Number 2, many characters' voices do not match their lips and it is really distracting. I think that's pretty much Falcor. I mean, that is a thing that happens. It is true. Falcor's lips do not line up.
But why is that? Like the fact that that's like a consideration that it's like, well, this giant puppet doesn't sort of, the mouth doesn't move the way that I think it ought to.
Yeah. I mean, that's more telling of the viewer than it is the movie.
Yeah.
If it's that distracting to you, then you need to get some Ritalin or something. But Atreyu screams most of his lines. We mentioned that last time. I just don't care. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he has a ton of them, anyways. You know.
Yeah.
So
One you agree with, Falcor is shockingly creepy.
Oh, dude. Yeah. No, that one, like, they're not wrong. Like, dude, the weird fungus bubble growth things. Like, yeah. Nah. It's, yeah.
It is unrelentingly depressing. It's like, is that a reason not to watch it? Yeah. It's dealing with a kid who's extremely depressed. It's like, yeah. I'm not sure that's an argument against the movie.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd even agree with it. Like, I think like it has like
it's not unrelentingly depressing.
I think it has a prolonged sort of depressing theme, but ultimately it's pretty like, especially the movie is pretty triumphalistic. It's pretty triumphant. Yeah. Like,
yeah, there's a huge strand of hope going.
Yeah, like this is BuzzFeed, so you know, it's like the Ernest Cline of online journalism.
This one, and this is a very Ernest Cline move, where you say something stupid and then you point out that it's stupid, that what you just said. Speaking of the nothing, it actually looks like a bunch of dark swirling clouds, which technically is something.
Well,
and he goes, only adults think in technicalities. Adults are the worst. Yeah. It's like, how? Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like depicting a black hole in film. A black hole sucks in light, so you can't actually see one in real life. If you did that in film, that would be stupid.
Yeah, well,
just
and that's like when it describes it in the book, like the nothing is literally nothing. It's just like when you're looking at it, it kind of looks like you've gone blind. Like there's something, like I think there's even a line where it talks about like the sort of the incomprehensible, like your brain can't fathom the horror of what nothing really looks like. So it just sort of like, it just stops seeing that part of things. It's like, no, we're not going to see this.
The final confrontation between Atreyu and Gamorrek is super lame.
Sorry about that. I'm very yawny.
The climactic revelation is even lamer. And he's talking about him yelling. Yelling out Moonchild.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
I mean, I have to agree that Moonchild is kind of a terrible name.
Yeah. But then the last one is that the song will get stuck in your head.
Good.
That's okay. Thank you so much for the raid. I really appreciate it.
It's like,
awesome. Yes. And it's like, yeah, it's definitely an earworm and it's really good.
Yeah, it's
thank you for the happy birthday.
It's like, it's good. Like it's, the song's going to, it's so catchy and it's going to get stuck in your head. And I'm like, okay. And what's the problem?
Yeah. As a songwriter, that's kind of what I'm going for.
Yeah.
If you walk away humming it, I count that as a victory. Anyways, BuzzFeed is the worst.
Oh, well, like I said,
last time I ever clicked on that website,
I did make the offhand comment, and I'm surprised it didn't get at least a chuckle out of you that it is basically the Ernest Cline of online journalism.
Right. Yes. There you go. Yeah. I wish that there were more websites where I would not say that, but
well, it's. It's part of the masturbatory culture of today.
Right. Yep.
It's problematic. You're welcome.
Well, thank you for hanging out talking about Neverending Story.
Nah, man.
Unlike the story, this podcast will end.
This will end. I am starting to fade. I'm sleepy.
People should check you out at the Backlog Breakdown.
Well, don't check me out. I'm married. That might get a little awkward. I mean, I appreciate the compliment.
I shouldn't have put your video up. Yeah.
No, if you're interested in the podcast, it's pretty much on any podcast or podcatcher. It's the hashtag Backlog Breakdown.
Your Discord server is pretty happening in place. Y'all talk about things and I make
snide remarks
because I don't understand anything that y'all are saying. I was this close
to getting y'all to play Final Fantasy IX with me,
dude,
and then
it actually
went off on control.
I thought IX was gonna get it. I mean,
yep.
Control was on Josh and I actually, one of the things we do is like, and you're one of the patrons. And so, you know, this, but, our patrons actually get to nominate games for us to play. And, a fellow patron nominated, Control. And so we will be doing that. And then it just sort of happy coincidence. That's going to be our, we started up, and it's weird because we've kind of come full circle, because the original Facebook group, the Backlog Book Club, was actually supposed to be something like what we're doing now.
Right. Yeah.
But it
does. Thanks so much for this stuff. Go ahead.
Well, it never materialized. So, but yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So, yeah. So that works out well. And at some point, we're running out a year. And so at some point, y'all are going to be forced to to play some Baldur's Gate.
Yeah. Yeah. We are running out of year. So it's going to happen sooner rather than later. I think after Control, that's going to be sort of like my big, Control was, like I said, Control is sort of on my radar anyways. So now that's sort of got some extra emphasis on it. As soon as that's done, though, I think like my big push is going to be on Baldur's Gate, at which point in time I will be messaging you and looking at all sorts of walkthroughs, and because like trying to figure that out, like, no, old Nate is old and ain't nobody got time for that, but I was going to try and figure eight. Nate body.
No, Nate got time for that.
I don't know. Yeah. Words. I'm a mush mouth. I'm tired. If anybody is, like I said, interested in following the podcast on, you know, Facebook and stuff, just look up the backlog, hashtag backlog book club on Facebook. On
Discord is the place.
Is the place to be. I mean, that we are there the most frequently and the most consistently, but, we're also on Twitter at, BB Downcast, mm-hmm. like to the letters B, so two B's and then Downcast. If anybody is interested in following me on Twitter or any of that, or friending me on any of this stuff, I usually just go by Nate_McKeever. Like, and that's pretty much my handle on everything. Like right now I'm playing a lot of Magic, the Gathering Arena, and it's Nate_McKeever with a bunch of numbers after it. So,
nice.
Yeah. But nice. Yeah, I thanks for having me on, man. Thanks for sort of I know that you don't remember, but throwing that out and giving me the opportunity to sort of sit down and chew on that book, because I think this is going to be one of those pieces of fiction that every couple of years I'm going to dig it out and just sort of like, I mean, again, now that I listen to my fiction, it's a lot easier, but I'm probably going to dig it out and re-listen to it here sometime.
I was really happy to read it or listen to it in this case.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's real good. And so I was happy to have done that. I need to get back to it more often, but, I do appreciate it. People on Twitch, hang on. We're going to end the recording here. I'm going to be on for a bit longer still. Nate, I really do appreciate it.
Dude.
We went longer than I thought we would, but that's
part for the course if you're going to have me show up on anything, it's going to run long. So.